fresh. What? Keep it fresh.
Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. Celebration, an indie psychedelic soul band from Baltimore, has been a fixture of the local music scene for more than a decade. Singer Katrina Ford fronts the three-piece with multi-instrumentalist and husband Sean Antonitis and drummer David Bergander. Never in one place for more than a few months, Katrina told me about her nomadic childhood and ultimately planting roots in Baltimore, where she has experienced the music scene's evolution from the days of flyers and word-of-mouth shows to the current online landscape. Katrina has been involved in many bands over the years, including Jax, Love Life, Birdland, and Mount Royal. She has also sung on TV on the Radio and Future Islands Records, and she relayed stories of her early punk days and the event that led to a shift in perspective and a change in direction for her musical projects. Formed in 2004, Celebration has released four full-length albums, most recently 2014's Album In, and they'll be putting out a new record in the spring. Here's my conversation with singer Katrina Ford. So what is your first memory of music?
That's really easy to answer because I've thought about it a lot. I think it was my fourth Christmas. My father was putting together a dollhouse for me and listening to Neil Young Decades the whole day. He put the, it's a double record, so it's four sides. It was just long enough to put all the Christmas toys together, and I just love that record so much. There's so many creepy kind of songs that kids can't really interpret very well, like Sugar Mountain and things like that, that seemed like fantastical. So, yeah, music was a big part of my life when I was growing up.
You wrote an essay about that album, didn't you?
Just a quick kind of interview thing. Yeah, I did, actually. Yeah, so when you brought it up, it was right on topic for me.
So what kind of other music were you listening to as a kid, and in what ways did that shape your childhood?
Well, my parents both really loved music so much, and my father really liked, hard rock, Led Zeppelin, and Black Sabbath, so there was always music playing in the house. My father was a drummer, but he had given up drums to become an engineering student. Both my parents loved music. My mom used to sing to me a lot when I was little and sang a lot of music that I don't really like very much. My mom's taste in music and mine don't really mesh, but I do appreciate, she used to sing James Taylor songs to me when I was a baby, and I really don't like James Taylor, but I do think it was a sweet gesture.
So did you like your dad's music taste at the time, or was that something you only appreciated in hindsight?
I think I really appreciated it when I was younger, and then when I went through my rebellious teen punk rock phase, I was not really into classic rock, and pulled away from that. And then I, came back, so it's the roots of my childhood.
How did you start discovering punk and other kinds of music?
Well, I felt like an outcast, and so I felt like a kindred spirit with the outcasts, the underdogs, and finding your tribe is really important when you're young and you don't know who you are, and if you feel like an outsider, if there's a song that speaks to you, and for me it was Joy Division and The Cure and Susie and the Banshees and stuff like that, and it was all kind of really dark sounding music. I mean, today it's kind of tongue-in-cheek sounding, but back then it was felt dramatic and matched where I felt like I was coming from.
Do you remember when you first started discovering that kind of music?
It's hard to say. I mean, my father was pretty progressive, and so he actually turned me on to The Cure and PIL, because he was always kind of searching for new things, and so he was a real foundation for that, even though I felt like I was rebelling when I got into stuff that was a little harder, that's where it kind of diverged for me, and I remember playing Jesus Lizard for my dad. This was a 90s punk band, and I thought, my dad's going to love this. It's super, classic rock foundation, drums, guitar, bass. But he just couldn't get with the singer because he didn't understand any of the words, and it was that was where our paths went separate ways and stuff. And so now, he tries to get me to listen to Stevie Ray Vaughan, and You know, he won't listen to anything I listen to or any of the music I make, but we do have, like, we could sit down and listen to a Hawkwind record together and really enjoy it.
He doesn't listen to the music you make?
He's so critical. He's a really intense person. Yeah, that was hard for me, actually, because when I started getting more serious about what I was doing and starting to see some success, you know, I thought I would get that approval. It's, you know, and I did. And, you know, kids always want approval from their parents. But my family, you know, I'm not putting into the context of really where they were coming from. Both my parents were really young when they had me, and they were both mentally unstable and on lots of drugs. And so we went through a lot. We grew up together. So he's kind of like my brother. He's not really like my dad. So it's kind of a different dynamic. So it's like my big brother doesn't listen to my music more than my dad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of different.
Do you think that's why you started making music? And who do you make it for now?
Yeah, I think, well, it's like, you know, I'm a creative person and an artist, and that was shown to me at a young age, like as an expression. So I don't know. It's hard to say. I always, of course, wanted approval and attention. When you grow up in a situation where you don't feel like you're being heard or your needs are being met, then there's this kind of needy aspect of, look at me, you know. And I think that might be how I started challenging being on stage and challenging being a shy person and also needing attention so badly. But finding an emotional outlet in music and wanting to be heard. I had a lot of angry things to say when I was younger, and now it's not so angry, you know? So I've been doing it a long time.
Have you always been a singer, and how did you discover your singing voice?
Ooh, yeah, I have, actually. I used to sing a lot to myself when I was little, and never had the courage to try out for any of the school plays and stuff. It's kind of really sad. I learned all the words to Annie when I was in fourth grade and would sing them to myself and stuff, but never have, like, the courage to, like, try out for something like that. You know, I was always the new kid. We were always moving around a lot, so I never had a community around me and never felt safe until I became a teenager, you know, and then grabbed it by the balls for myself and found my voice and had a creative outlet. I didn't even really think of it as singing, because when I started out, it was, you know, really punk rock and really a lot of guttural and angry, just angry. I was an angry kid. But, you know, I've been making music now for 24 years, so, like, I've had a long journey and a long, you know, a lot of things happen along the way and a lot of different ways to express myself. And so when I was younger, it was a matter of finding power, feeling like powerless, and then finding a power in expression.
Was there a place you consider your hometown?
Baltimore now, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we've been here 19 years. This is as long as I've ever lived anywhere. You know, it's a long time, you know. But when I was growing up, I was born in South Carolina, and I moved every few months, sometimes every couple of weeks. It would just depend, because if I was living with my mom, we were always kind of running away from situations. So I didn't really get a traditional education or anything like that. I feel like I'm kind of like one of those gypsy kids that just lived all over the place and did all kinds of things, and it was colorful and scary, and because of that, I feel like an alien in a way. But when I came to Baltimore, this is such a strange town, and it kind of embraces the strange and the underdog, you know. Seeing John Waters movies, like as your podcast is named after, it celebrates the freak, you know. And I felt like this town was my place, and I could grow roots here, and this is my home for sure now.
Were you looking for that place to settle down? And did you enjoy moving around so much as a kid?
I hated moving around when I was a kid. Absolutely hated it. But then, you know, it sculpted who I became or who I am. And because of that, I, you know, was forced to be more fearless and forced to be adaptable, flexible. And so there is kind of like a really relieving feeling to just run away from all your problems and change who you are and all that stuff. But when you are somewhere for a while, you have to build relationships that last. And that's something new for me, doing that here in Baltimore. I mean, I'm married, and I've been with my husband now for 24 years. But he's the only relationship that I've had for that long. Most people grow up with, like, you know, family or kids they went to school with and have some kind of community. I didn't really have that, but I have found that here in this town, and it's great people.
Do you ever have the desire to pick up and move again?
Recently, yes. Only, you know, I love this town, but it is changing quite a bit. It's getting a lot more crowded, and I find myself, as I'm getting older, wanting a little more space and wanting to grow things. And, you know, so maybe one day we won't be in the city. You know, I'm not sure, you know, what's going to happen. But for right now, we really love living where we live, and we've made our house our little sanctuary, and we could afford to do that in a town like Baltimore, being artists, musicians, because this town isn't, or at least when we moved here, a lot more available for, you know, working class people. It's not like, and you're close to New York, close to D.C. We got, you know, the first time home buyers program, and we're able to get in a situation that any other town we would have never had those opportunities.
How did you and your husband Sean meet?
High school. We met in high school in the early 90s. And we both went to a school that's similar to the Baltimore School of the Arts. It's a school in Ann Arbor, Michigan called Community High. I went to community for the last year and a half of high school, and that was the longest I'd lived anywhere. And met him in art class, and he was shy and really talented, you know, and just charmed me. So I just wanted to play music with him first. You know, he was a little bit younger than me, actually. He's 3 years younger than me. So we started playing music together, and we didn't become a couple till like a couple years later. We were first in a band together.
Yeah. And was that Jax?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can you tell me about that experience?
Yeah, it was really fun. We were just high school kids wanting to make some noise, and had all these like ideas and all this energy, and just had a lot of fun with it, and toured around the country, put out a couple records. Yeah, it was cool.
What was the reception like in Ann Arbor?
It was amazing. I mean, because back then, underground music and independent music didn't have the industry that it has now. So we were playing in basements and church halls and things like that. And so the people, the kids that would come out for these all-ages shows in these spaces that were not, they weren't under security, there wasn't like hand stamps, or, you know, it was like very disorganized, somebody's house you'd be playing at. The reception was really welcoming. It was a totally different thing, because it wasn't a business, it was a community. So people would feed you and put you up and party all night. And, you know, it was really fun when we were kids. That's how I got to see America.
How did you guys end up in Baltimore?
After Jax split up, we lived in New Orleans for a year. Sean and I moved to New Orleans because we had fallen in love with that city. We'd visited before and thought we should just, you know, move here and see what we can get going. We wanted to play music, but then ended up didn't find our people, basically. We were there for a year, and we played with a few different people and just didn't find a community that we wanted to be a part of. I mean, New Orleans at the time was very, it was just like kind of loose, I guess. People just came and went. It was transient is the word I'm looking for. So, you know, we became part of that transience. We left, you know. But I loved that year we were there. And when we came to Baltimore, we chose Baltimore. It was between Baltimore and D.C. We knew we couldn't afford to live in New York. And we knew we wanted to play music. And we had so many friends we had made here touring to Baltimore, playing in D.C., that we felt like we already had a community here, so we decided to move here and found our place, really.
How would you describe the Baltimore scene at that time?
Not much was happening. It was pretty thin. There wasn't that many bands. The bands that we had connected with were Lungfish and Candy Machine, and both those bands were still going at the time, but kind of winding down, changing. It was kind of all over the place. There was a bunch of different bands, and there wasn't really any community. There was Southwest Baltimore, Sewebo area, where they used to have a festival, but that was kind of like an end of an era. When we moved here, it was kind of like this lull in the art and music scene, at least from my perspective. I mean, it might have been because I was a newcomer. I didn't really know. But when we started playing music again and formed Love Life, there, you know, it just didn't feel like there was a lot going on then. And now it's just exploded. It's a totally different thing. You know, it's cool.
Yeah, I was hoping you could tell me more about the differences now, because you have seen so many phases in the Baltimore music scene and been part of them.
Yeah, it's wild because we're living in a different time now. I mean, when we moved to Baltimore, there wasn't internet the way we have it now. There wasn't that way to share information, whether it be here's where the show is or this is what I'm doing. It was word of mouth, flyers. Now everyone's so connected. It's really great. But people also feel like they can do more than they physically can to a degree. And people are pushing their limits. I feel like I'm one of those people too. You know, you feel like with the digital age, you can juggle a lot more. So for instance, I work on other people's records now more than I would have done like when I first moved here. That wasn't really an option, that kind of quick get together, share files. It was a big production if you wanted to work on somebody's record. I mean, you got to wind up the tape. So it's a totally different thing. So now, like, what I'm saying is people are involved in so many different projects. I have like two bands that I play with. Well, one of them not that regular now, Mount Royal. But I have the freedom to do more and to make these connections and to be a part of things without the physical world getting in the way. It's all virtual now, which is freeing. But like I said, I also think that I can do a lot more than I can, because I'm like, oh, I could do that. But it really does take time if you want to put yourself into something and you want to put out quality, you know. So, you know, it seems like a lot of people I know, a lot of the younger kids, like some of these kids are in like five bands. I'm like, how do you do it?
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's cool. And everybody's kind of trading, playing with each other and sharing ideas in a way that I feel like is more free. And when we first moved here, I had a different idea of what making music was. Being in a band was almost like a marriage. And I mean, it still is to a degree, like this is your gang. But it's not going to hurt that gang if you work with other people, you know, and expand your expression, you know, and learn from others. So we've done that a lot. All of us have had a chance to work with other people. And since we're not touring as much as we used to, we have a lot more time to do those kind of things. And it's fun.
Are you nostalgic for any parts of those early days?
No, not at all. It was fun. I mean, I'm glad I did everything that I did and saw the things I saw. And I feel like part of me is like, I used to party a lot and stuff, so I don't party as much as I used to. But I feel like I've been there and done that, you know. So I've been in the desert, like camped out in the middle of the night, drinking all night with like 10 people on somebody's farmland, like having ceremonies, just finding myself in different situations that most adults don't find themselves in. And, you know, it was like I got to be a kid when I was in my 20s because I didn't have a childhood, so I got to embrace that. And now I feel like, you know, I've kind of grown up a little. I go to bed a little earlier. I don't drink anymore and stuff like that. But I'm just as creative and want to make more stuff.
So you've been in quite a few bands, but Celebration is your longest running band.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about forming Celebration?
Yeah, when Love Life broke up, we decided that Sean and I were going to just do a two-piece. And so we had a band called Birdland for a little while. And it was just Sean playing organ and bass pedals and me singing and hitting a drum, and we had a drum machine, and it was like really raw and it was fun.
And it was all Orioles themed songs.
Of course. Don't you know it?
Yeah.
It's funny though, because that moniker didn't happen until later, when after the band had dissolved. But well,
you
it didn't
guys
really
started
dissolve.
Birdland.
Oh yeah. I mean, not really. Charlie Parker did, but you know. But David, who plays drums with us, also played in Love Life, and so he used to come to Birdland shows and have these puppy dog eyes and look like he wanted to play with us again. And we didn't want to play with the drum machine. We just wanted to be streamlined. And so we asked him to play with us again. And it was a blast and really successful and really fun. And, you know, we had a good run and still doing it.
How do you think you settled on the sound or the direction of Celebration, and why has this worked for you for so long?
I don't think it's like a conscious effort to say, settling for us, just like, you know, as a musician, you're always, well, I mean, I can only speak for myself. It's like you learn how to better express what is inside. And also what's inside is always changing, you know. But then it's also a collective of what's inside these people. But we have a relationship because we've been working together so long. So it gets deeper and more there's more telekinesis here or whatever. We can almost read each other's thoughts at this point because we've been playing together so long. So it's like really effortless and fun. And the flavors where we're coming from is emotional, like the same emotional landscape because we're spending our time and our life together. We're a family. David, our drummer, is like our family. Sean and I are married, and his wife and child and his mother-in-law, that we're all family. We spend holidays together and stuff like that. So I'm lucky I've been adopted by these other people, and I've got to make this family with the people I make music with. So it doesn't really answer the question about musically, but I'd say when we first started, I mean, the name Celebration is like, you know, about partying, you know, and it's about a party, and you can celebrate all kinds of things, but life goes through, it puts you through some crazy things that you know, like death and illness and health issues. I mean, at our age, we've had parents pass away and had personal problems and family problems. And those things, because we're so close, we can share those things with each other emotionally and musically, and they get filtered in. And also how we feel about the world and ourselves now. And music's this universal language that even though you may be sharing something that's very personal, everyone can find that thread of humanity in their own interpretation in their own life. And that's what you want to do, is like have that common ground with people or make people feel not alone. And these are the people I can share that with and be vulnerable with, and they support me so that we can do it together in front of people and not be afraid, you know. So it's cool.
Are there any drawbacks that come with having the music and the rest of your life so intertwined? Do you ever wish there was more separation?
No, I don't wish for more separation, but I, you know, it does make it kind of messy sometimes, you know, but that's, it's intense, that's all. We've had different things go on in our lives. Like I said, we've had health issues. Like I was really sick for a while, and David's wife was really sick for a while, so, you know, I lost my mom last year. These are people that I can count on, but also we have a long history together. And if I have something going on personally with my relationship with my husband, I don't want it to affect the music, but it does because it's us. And all we can do is try to work through it through the music. You know, this is like another way to communicate with each other too, you know. But it does, like I said, it's just intense. That's all. It's just deeper. If I was just making music to make music and doing it with people I don't really care about, it's a different thing. It's just, you know, and this is the path that we've woven for ourselves, you know, purposefully.
Going back to the name, you were coming off of some musically darker projects, mm-hmm. I would say, before Celebration. So was there like a shift in perspective? And can you tell me more about the joyous idea behind Celebration?
Yeah, it might, you know, the story might sound kind of corny, but of course I was really into goth music when I was in high school, and I feel like that was something I felt a kinship with, and dark themes. But as I grew older and hopefully wiser, I got to experience some things in life that were dark, real dark, and got to see its effects on the planet and on people. And when September 11th, I hate to bring that up, but honestly, that was a pivotal moment in my life emotionally, because I could not be tongue-in-cheek about dark things anymore. It was just real life, and I didn't want to be a part of bringing on anything more dark. I wanted to celebrate life. We wanted to make music that would bring more joy, but still be rooted in some kind of reality of, you know, not just party, but yeah, it's a heavy thing, but I really did feel that way. All of a sudden, it just seems silly to me to be inspired by death. That's not life-affirming. That, you know, if you're so inspired, then just go. You know, like, why didn't I just, you know. So anyways, I grew up.
Yeah, that does seem to... It's always romanticized when you're in high school, and if you haven't gone through anything real yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like I had in a way. I mean, honestly, I'd been through a lot of really crazy shit growing up. Pardon my French. So I think that's what attracted me to it, to those dark themes, to feel I guess, like I could revel in my gloom or my depression. I don't know really, but I did grow out of it when I wanted to not be a part of making light of something that I felt like was not funny anymore, you know, or something. Yeah, you know, not to be too heavy, but I really felt like, you know, we need to get people together to feel good after feeling so much bad.
I was hoping you could tell me about your live shows and what does it feel like performing live?
Well, I've been doing it so long. We just played recently at a party, a wedding. A friend of ours got married and asked us to play. And it had been the first show we'd played in a year. And I was kind of nervous and I couldn't really face the audience. And it's crazy because I also had stopped drinking recently and I used to drink a lot. So I felt like it was kind of my buffer between feeling nervous or the people. Even though I wanted more than anything to connect to people, it's still like a little different performing now, not drinking, you know? But my goal always was to like not feel like we were on a pedestal, but we were with everybody and everybody was with us in this moment together. And that, like, I don't know, it's all really kind of hippie now sounding, but yeah, I want an experience. We all want to feel like we're not separate from each other or separate from the audience. And, you know, I feel like there's times where I feel that and there's times where I don't, you know, and I don't really have control over it. But each time we get up on the stage, I feel like I'm trying for that.
Is it cathartic for you? And is the feeling that you get after a really great live performance now the same as it was 20 years ago?
It's different now. It's very cathartic for sure. I feel like it can be self-indulgent to be that cathartic because it's just not my own emotional thing, you know? I feel like I'm representing these people and I have a lot to get out. So I try to like control it in order to be aware that I'm singing still, you know? Because sometimes it could just be like, I have a lot of feelings and I have to learn how to steer them in a way that, you know, brings everybody along on the ride. So it's not just me having a hissy fit, you know, but it's fun. It's really fun. And you know, if we have any like technical difficulties, which we've been plagued with in the past, because we always play with really old equipment. My husband has like old synthesizers and like a Leslie cabinet from the 70s. And this stuff sounds great, but it just, it's kind of old. But we recently just updated everything, so we're not going to have those kind of issues. But that will bring you out of the moment quickly. If you are like, something's wrong with the equipment, then it's not fun. But it's fun when you forget who you are, where you are, that it's just this one thing, this expression, and it's over before you know it. When I was a kid, when we first started playing, I didn't think about trying to control it at all. I just had to let stuff out. And it wasn't pretty. It was not that it's pretty now either, but but I realized that not everybody can connect to that mania the way that, you know, I needed to express it. But now I can choose where it should be in order to, you know, take you on a journey with the music. And so that comes with, you know, time and hopefully like honing my skills. I wasn't really a singer before, you know. Secretly, but not really, you know. And then I became one and tried to find where I could use that energy in a way to express really deep things at the right time instead of just going off. Because my first band was, so punk rock that it was like we were going to scare you into this experience, which was fun. It was totally fun. At 19, doing that was great. But at 44, I don't feel the same way anymore, and I want this, you know, different message to come across, you know, this collective experience, not my feelings are hurt and I'm going to stomp and scream about it, you know, like I was when I was a kid. But that was important.
Why hadn't you performed in about a year?
We've been working on a record, and Sean just decided to update his equipment. Like I was talking about, we had all this ancient 70s equipment. We were like, we need to make ourselves streamlined so that we can not have these issues. And we want to tour some more. now that we have a little more freedom, like our health is better, some kids have grown up, so we've got some more time to do that, you know, so we want to do that again. And we've also, we were playing with our friends Tony Drummond and Walker Tarrett. They were playing with us for a few years off and on. Walker's been playing with us for 10 years, but they needed to go do their projects and we wanted to come back to the original three piece. And so that's what we've been working on for the last year. So we're really excited about getting back out and playing, putting a new record out and yeah, showing people what we've been doing.
Yeah, what's the when's the next record coming out? What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's going to come out next year. We're not sure exactly when yet. Don't have the release date, but we just delivered it to the label. And it's called Wounded Healer, and it'll be out on Bella Union probably by spring next year. And we hope to be touring by spring, just some little tours. You know, we're not going to do any of the big road dog things like we used to, like 3 months on the road. You know, when we were 25, that was really fun and cool, but I can't do that shit now. Yeah. but I love, you know, being at home with my cats, my husband, and synthesizers, and making cool music in our basement, and that will always happen.
Are you always creating music, or are there times when the band makes a deliberate effort to write an album?
We're always creating. We're back cataloged so far. We've got the next record already written, and we got behind, actually, because when we had these family and health problems, like, a couple years ago, we kept writing music in our basement as a way, you know, that's what we do. But we didn't put out a record for a few years, so we got kind of behind. But that's fine, you know, it's just the way it is. But we just kind of never stop. And it's really fun to have a computer in your house that you can do all these things. When we first started out, it was like recording yourself on a boombox. And now we can, like, I can say, oh, I want to work on harmony vocals, and I'll teach myself how to do it. You know, I'm not trained, but I'm going to learn this because I'm not touring now and I can do those kind of things. So we've had this time to kind of, like, regroup and say, okay, we're a little more grown up, how we're going to do this now, you know? And it's fun. It's totally fun.
I'm curious how you look back on your past material. And after you put out an album or a song, is it done to you? It's in the past? Or is that always part of the canon in a way?
Right.
You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it has to be, in a sense, when you're talking about playing live, because people want to hear the song that they loved from that record or whatever. So we still play stuff even from our first record live. So we have to, you know, being a band as long as we have, you know, it's funny to have a catalog that's so huge to refer to. But when we're done with the record, I'm so excited about what we're doing currently, because we're always working on the next record while we're doing a record, that I can't wait for it to be, you know, the next record. That's me. I don't know about the guys. And as far as, like, past projects, it's taken me a long time to be able to listen to any of that stuff. I had to put together some Jack stuff for a compilation a few years ago, and I could listen to it again. I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Me when I was 19, like, screaming my brains out about blood and stuff, you know, and it was like, it seems, it's novelty, but it's sweet. But the band Love Life, I haven't been able to listen to that, you know. I feel like, I felt when we were doing that really stifled, like we had this growth spurt we needed, that needed to happen, and we didn't make decisions to push through. And then when we did, it just exploded into celebration because we eliminated all the roadblocks, people, business, all this stuff in order to be able to have the creative expression that we wanted to. Sean and I just love writing. We're very prolific. When we worked with some people we worked with in Love Life, these people didn't want to do the same stuff we did. So it's hard for me to listen to that.
Yeah,
because it makes me feel like, oh, God, I wasted some time. But, you know, I might be able to listen to it later. I think it just needs time, more time.
I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about your experiences on a label and some of the frustrations that have come with that for you, and just the differences between that and working independently.
Oh, that's a good question. Well, we're with a label now, and we did put out, through Friends Records, we had them, a local label, press vinyl, but we've essentially released Hello Paradise on our own. as kind of this knee-jerk reaction to an experience we had with 4AD. And, you know, they're a different label now. They've changed ownership. So, you know, I can speak a little more freely about it without feeling like I'm, you know, talking shit. But it's difficult when you have to talk to lawyers and sign contracts about something that, like music, it's hard to put it into those terms. And it's great when you have someone that can represent you like a manager and stuff like that. But I just don't like business at all. And they played ball in a way that we made bad decisions with them and learned our lesson. And I hope they learned some of theirs too. But the difference was, this was while the industry was still spending a lot of money on independent bands. And that since then has kind of pulled back a bit. But they spent a whole lot of money on us, but they spent it in really irresponsible ways, but yet we had to pay for it out of our royalties or out of our... So it was, just to make a long story short, it was kind of just this bad deal. Like, they made bad decisions, like flying us to all these places in Europe to do interviews, but not to play. Just stuff like that. And then we would have to pay the bill for that. And so just, I was like, what are we doing? I want to play music. Here I am, you know, talking to this journalist in Germany who doesn't know who we are and doesn't care, but they want us to do this interview to get us exposed. And I think because they had been working with huge bands like Cocteau Twins, they had this foundation and this lineage, and we were this new band they were trying to do something with. And since then, they've reinvented themselves, and they have, like, Ariel Pink and, you know, a lot of really great bands in a whole different direction now. But when we were with them, it was before they had broken out of that old mold of what they had created with, you know, the Bauhaus era, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, being a part of that label was like, you know, a dream come true for me when we first signed, because I loved so many records they had put out and had been so inspirational to me. But then when it came down to the business, it was a totally different thing. And we didn't feel like we were making music. We felt like we were making weird decisions with lawyers and about big money that had nothing to do with doing what we love to do. And so when we split with them, we decided, let's just put our stuff out ourselves, no pressure. And we thought we could do that and people would find out what we were doing, but we just kind of dropped off the face of the earth. People didn't know what we were up to. And we're not really good at selling ourselves. We're not involved in social media at all for different reasons, partially because we come from a different era and we just don't do things like that. I just don't self-sell, you know. So we just put out all this music and nobody heard it. And when Bella Union came along and offered to put out our record, it was really also an easy decision to make, because friends of ours had worked with them and we could see that they were not as frivolous business-wise and a little like smaller operation and more of a family kind of situation. The owner of the label is Simon, who played bass in Cocteau Twins. So, you know, he also had dealt with 4AD too, so he knew some of the people. But yeah, so I've seen things change a lot in the industry, you know, going from independent music not being a big player to being a big player to being the record industry losing tons of money because of the digital age, which has changed the landscape of what's available for resources. I just don't like business at all, personally. And luckily, the people that we're working with now are friends, and I feel like they have our best interests. And we're doing kind of like a smaller thing. We're not trying to push really hard. We just want to make music. So, yeah.
What were Celebration's ambitions, if any? Was there ever that goal of like getting signed to a label? Or what were you hoping for? Or was it really just, we want to get the music in the hands of as many people as possible?
Originally, it was definitely to have a label, because when we first were kind of starting out, we were in Brooklyn a lot at the time. I mean, we lived in Baltimore, but we were doing a lot of our business in Brooklyn and playing with bands in Brooklyn. And there was a lot happening in the scene then. And our friends were getting signed to these big labels and getting these deals. And so when we got ours, it was like just part of what was going on. But we always just wanted people to believe in us, you know, and hear our music. And at the time, that's what we thought was how it was going to be done by having a label help you. And then when we felt let down, then we realized, well, maybe we could do this for ourselves. But then we were, you know, it's just, it was such a learning. Every step of the way was such a learning experience. And because the landscape keeps changing, it's not like you can know exactly what to do next. All I know is that we have people that believe in us and that want to put out our music and want other people to hear it. And we don't have to think about how is it going to get manufactured, you know, how is it going to get to this radio station. They'll make sure that happens, and we can just concentrate on doing what we love to do. So that's good, and that's what's happening now.
I read in an interview that you said people in bands tend to fall into one of two camps. They are artists who make music, or they are musicians. I was hoping you could tell me more about that, because I think that's really interesting. And where do you fall on that spectrum?
I don't know when I said that, but I
it was
so
probably
ignorant.
Way back. I know I go I go into these into the internet K-hole, so
it's all good. I feel like I don't think in absolutes anymore, so it's interesting that you asked me that. But if someone, I mean, if I were to answer it right off the bat for myself, I'd say I'm an artist making music, trying to be a musician. I would have never called myself a musician when I started, and it took me a while before I would even consider myself a singer, but I definitely am an artist first.
What did it take for you to believe that you were a singer?
Having other people tell me that I was worth something. I know that sounds terrible, but it's hard to believe in yourself, but when other people want you to sing on their records or give you love for what you love to do, then you know you're on the right path.
What are Celebration's hallmarks? Like, if someone were to write something about Celebration, what would they have to write where you would be like, yeah, they got it, they understand us?
I have no idea. I want people to, if they said it was like a wild ride that you felt like was going off the rails and that you were just on the edge of your seat and you wanted the underdog, us, to win, then I'd say they got it right.
Do you always want to be the underdog?
No, but I am. But I do love the underdog, you know, so I guess I don't want to be, but I think I am. Yeah.
Has the reason you make music and has the reason you're part of this band changed since you started Celebration more than a decade ago?
No, I don't think it has. I've changed, but the reasons why I do it, no, they're still the same. I still want everybody to come together and feel like one. I don't want any separation between, I don't know, I guess it's some kind of singularity I want, you know. I still want that. I wanted that then. I still want it now.
Katrina, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Katrina Ford. Female Trouble is on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and everywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also listen online at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble. We're on Twitter at FMLTrouble, where you can tweet us suggestions or just say hi. If you like the podcast, it would help us out to subscribe and give us a rating on iTunes. As always, our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring Baltimore's own TT the Artist. Thanks, and see you next week. Dope Girls!